So our next speaker is Dini Gauthier, and he's going to talk about entropy, another interesting entropy session, finding random bits for OpenSSL. He's his leader of national Oracle's security system and encryption team. Dini is responsible for strategic development of the cryptographic toolkits used in many of the Oracle products. Before joining Oracle, he led a team of cryptographic toolkit developers at RSA and was responsible for FIPS validation of the RSA BSafe toolkits. He has a long career here in terms of computer security. He has worked for 20 years in telecommunication and computer security. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming to this talk. So this talk is called Finding Random Bits for OpenSSL. And hopefully some of you got to go to the talks this morning about entropy. There's some good talks. Valerie and Stefan both presented. I'm hoping that this talk will complement those talks. This is really from a much higher level. It's sort of an overview of entropy. My team works with cryptographic toolkits, and so what I'm wanting to give you is sort of a high-level view of what you need to know about entropy if you're working with cryptographic toolkits. And the one in question, of course, is OpenSSL, which is in popular use. Excuse me. Okay, so what are we going to talk about? OpenSSL's entropy module. Why would you want to find entropy for OpenSSL? Then we'll talk a bit about finding some good quality entropy, and then maybe designing some aspects or considerations if you're designing a software module that gathers entropy from your sources and feeds it to your entropy pool. Okay, so here's some nice definitions of entropy. They're a little bit abstract. They tell us about the nature of entropy. I'd like you to ignore these definitions. For the sake of this talk, I'm going to give you a very simple definition. Entropy is just a secret. As far as the cryptographic toolkit is concerned, entropy is just a secret, and we use it to make other secrets. If you know the entropy that you're using, then if it's not a secret, then you can unravel everything. So this is, I just want to drive the point home that you have to get the entropy right to get the crypto right. It's foundational. So OpenSSL, let's look at OpenSSL a little bit. In the FIPS case, do you need to bring your own entropy? Well, the security policy says that you need to supply it by means of callback functions, and you need to make sure that you've got it comes there's the right security strength. So you might wonder why OpenSSL is being a little bit careful around this. For years, the FIPS validation authorities had a no comment policy on entropy, and I guess what it suggests is that finding entropy can be a bit of a tricky business. Now, what about the non-FIPS case? Will OpenSSL give you entropy in that case? Yes, you're in luck, it will. But let's look at that a little more closely. So what happens is your system comes up, your operating environment comes up. Hopefully you heard what Stefan had to say about that this morning. Then your application starts, it uses OpenSSL. OpenSSL goes looking for 256 bits of entropy. And it looks for those bits in these files, sockets, and other things that I've listed here in this order. So it starts with dev u random, it says, give me 256 bits. If it doesn't have enough, it moves on to dev random, dev s random, and so on. Now, dev u random doesn't block, and it doesn't fail. So I think in most cases, you're going to get all your entropy from Dev Urandom, and the rest are effectively ignored. And the problem is that in many cases this is happening around startup when there isn't much entropy around. So you probably don't have 256 bits of entropy. Dev Urandom is the output of a PRNG, and you probably have considerably less than 256 bits. I think from Stefan's talk it was, you know, down around, in the examples he was giving, around 10 bits. But say you have 50, that's still not 256 bits. And unfortunately, there is one single global PRNG for all crypto for all time. So unless you reseed those, that's all the entropy that you have for all time. So the possibility here is that we start with not enough entropy, and then we never reseed, so we never add to it. So whether you're doing FIPS or not, it's a good idea to bring your own entropy, and it's a good idea too to reseed for forward secrecy. Okay, so bring your own entropy. That should be easy, right? We'll just get it from Dev Random. The problem here is that not everyone knows how to do this. The people who are really doing this, engineers, they've got various deadlines, they've got competing priorities. Often they just don't know a whole lot, or they don't know enough about entropy to do this right. And Google has got plenty of examples. You don't have to look very hard to find one like this one that I've got up here on Ubuntu forums, where the developer seeded his random with time zero plus get PID. Now, in most cases, we would say there is no entropy here. If we wanted to be really generous, we could say maybe 20 bits of entropy, but the developer was subsequently advised to get rid of getPID because that was overkill. So now we're down to, if we're really generous, 3 or 4 bits of entropy, and if we're going to be creating keys with a security strength of 112 bits or more, that's just not enough. We need to find some good quality entropy. And what do I mean by that? We need enough entropy. We need entropy that really is random. And we need entropy that we can trust. And more importantly, or maybe more to the point, it's not necessarily entropy that we can trust. It's entropy that we can convince someone else to trust. And that can be really hard. So let's talk about each of these things. Getting enough entropy. Now, as I said before, my team works with cryptographic toolkits. We have a number of different operating environments, quite a few of them. And the problem is that there is no universal solution. DevRandom and DevUrandom probably come as close as it comes to having a universal solution, but not every system, if you heard Valerie's talk this morning, even that is not consistent across platforms. If you really want to understand the behavior of your entropy sources, you need to look at that. And in some cases, you won't have those sources. If you have HRNGs, they will give you lots of entropy, which is great. If you only have software sources, that's a little bit harder. But in general, and I know I'm making a number of generalizations here, I'm just speaking from a high level, so please forgive me, but in general, with software, the higher amounts of entropy are going to come from the lower order bits of timers. And that's just because there are a lot of things going on the complicated processing environments that we have. A lot of events taking place. We don't know exactly when they're going to happen, certainly not to a nanosecond granularity. I'll give you a few examples of entropy. And these are just examples. This is obviously not an exhaustive list. These things don't give you much entropy. There's a misconception, maybe not in this room. I think I'm preaching to the choir here, but there's a misconception generally among developers that keyboard strokes and mouse movements will give you lots of entropy. They don't really give you a lot, particularly because a lot of the systems out there are headless, so there's no entropy coming from those sources. Use them, of course. Every little bit helps, but don't rely on them. Can we do better than that? Of course. Yes, we can. So here's a few examples. If you have a sound card on your system, Turbid and Random Sound both take advantage of that to give you some entropy. And if you're using Turbid, The nice thing about it is you get approvable minimum amount of entropy based on Johnson Nyquist noise. Devu-random, great source of entropy, of course. You're not sure how much. If you're looking in the kernel, and my team's done a bit of this, there are bits of entropy from various kernel sources on various systems, and if you put them all together, they give you a decent amount. And of course, dev-random, particularly on Unix systems, is a great source of entropy, but it blocks, and that's obviously not desirable. Can we do better than that? Well, yes, we can. I said earlier that for software sources, higher amounts of entropy will come from the lower order bits of timers, the high-speed timers, the instruction counter, TSC. Maxwell is a timer jitter source. Start a timer when it finishes, read the time. CPU jitter, ultimately, that's lower order bits of timers as well. And that, the example I have here is Havoget. In hardware, RDRAND is the most well-known example of a hardware entropy source. But there's a whole range of HRNGs out there, and if you have a system that can make use of that, then please do. I've got a few examples here just for fun. On the top there's a device that you plug into your USB. It's aimed to be a very transparent device. You can see the resistors, you can see the capacitors, you can understand that the circuit that's being used to generate it. In the middle of it, you'll see there's an IC, however. That's a USB-enabled SoC. So if you really want to be transparent, you're going to have to look at what code is being put on that SoC. On the other end of the scale, we've got I've got a picture on the inside of something called the Dice-O-Matic, which is 100 pounds, it's 7 foot tall, and it will roll 1.3 million rolls of a dice every 24 hours. Which sounds really great, right? But if you strap one of these to each box you ship, your production guys will kill you. It's actually only about 50 bits per second that it's giving you, and the device on top should be giving you about 340,000 bits per second. But just to say, there's a wide range of HRNGs out there, and depending on your system, you know, find the one that's right. So how much entropy are we talking about for these software sources that I was talking about earlier? Now, the graph here really is, it describes entropy sources according to my team's use of it, so take it with a grain of salt, but what it does give you is an idea of the range. We've got disk stats here that are giving us 1 bit per second. We've got other timer sources that are giving us 50 to 60 bits per second. Not a lot of entropy, really, but certainly enough to seed and reseed OpenSSL or any other toolkit you're working with. So let's turn to the next question. How do I know that my entropy really is unpredictable, really is random? And some people think that the answer is to run statistical tests. SB800, the NIST tests are a good place to start, but don't limit yourself to the NIST tests. There's other good tests out there. And the thing is that if we could measure the unpredictable, would it really be unpredictable? And the reality is that all of these tests will give you false negatives, and all of them will give you false positives. They will detect some non-randomness. They're definitely worth running, and they help you to get an idea, estimate your entropy. But they cannot prove randomness. And you might, or maybe you're not, wondering to what extent can this give me confidence that I've really got sources that are giving me some randomness. Well, no surprises, they cannot distinguish between good entropy and the output of a PRNG. PRNGs are designed to give you data that looks random, so no surprises there. However, they can't distinguish the output between the output of entropy of a good entropy source from simple mathematical functions either. And we actually ran these SP890 BIID tests on libcrand, which is notorious as a poor source of entropy. And it told us we had nearly 8 bits per byte of entropy. So that doesn't give us a lot of confidence. Here's a very simple math function that we tried. This is just e to the x, where x is taking values between 1 and 3, so there are no discontinuities. It's a very simple function. We take points along that piece of the curve. We take bits 21 to 28 of those points, create a data set, run these statistical tests, and guess what? Everything passes with flying colors. Well, almost everything. There's the test user won crush and big crush tests. Didn't pass with flying colors. But still, you might wonder why NIST doesn't use test user 1 and crush and big crush, and I don't really know why, but one thing I do know is that there are a lot of samples required to run these tests. You need a big data set. And as it is right now, with some of these slow software sources, to collect the number of data points that you need to run these statistical tests, for NIST, the NIST tests would take you up to 3 months. And with the new SP890B version that's in draft now, 6 to 8 months, which is getting a bit on the high side. However, if you were to try and run the test year 01 tests, and please note the scale here is logarithmic, it would take you between 30 and 3,000 years to get your test points. So that's not very practical. Okay, so bottom line is it's just about impossible to measure the quality of your entropy. Do run these statistical tests. They will catch some poor entropy. But if someone decides to substitute your entropy for their well-behaved mathematical function, you won't know the difference. And I suppose the only difference will be that you think it's random and they know exactly what's coming out. And that's why trust is really central in picking good entropy sources. So what do I mean by that? What do I mean by trust? You need to do due diligence, evaluate your sources. Again, depending on the system that you're working with, it's going to be tailored to that system. The cardinal rule here is that transparency is good. You want to know that no one's hiding anything. But that's only good if you actually take the time to examine your sources. We had one source that was open source. We took a good look at the code, and we found that it was giving us 100 times less entropy than what was advertised. Someone made a mistake. So take your time. Have a good look at it. Ask yourself questions, technical questions. How complex is the source? Does it originate from a real-world stochastic process? These are good questions to ask when you're talking about entropy. How easy is it to attack? How easy is it to attack the operating environment so that it becomes predictable? But you need to go beyond that and ask yourself questions like, is this entropy source being pushed by a powerful entity? Were you asked to use it but not given the reasons why? What's the history of the entropy source? Be suspicious of what you don't understand, and particularly if you can't examine it. So unfortunately, that I can't really touch on that topic without mentioning R.D. Rand. Look, I really don't think that Intel would fiddle the silicon. I don't think they would take the risk. But as I said before, it's a question of not just convincing yourself, but convincing people that you're giving this to. And the problem is that HRNGs are packaged in an IC, and an IC is a black box. And the irony is that a black box is a really great place to hide a good entropy source, but it's also a really good place to hide a pseudo-entropy source, and you can't tell the difference. So it's a dilemma. And I don't know of any way around that dilemma exactly, but I think one good strategy is just to diversify. So if you have a number of different sources and one of them happens to fail, then you know that there's others there that may not fail or may not be compromised. And in a strange way, that sort of, because software sources can be quite transparent, adds license to the argument that we should have both hardware and software sources being fed into our entropy pool. So I just want to talk for a few minutes about design considerations. If you're creating a software module that collects entropy from various sources and then feeds it to your entropy pool, what do you have to consider? First of all, I said the number one thing is diversify. You need multiple independent sources. They need to be independent because you don't want to double count your entropy. But it's sometimes quite difficult to tell that they really are independent. There are strategies you can use to work with that. The other thing is you will need a scheduler. So if you have multiple sources, and your sources, some of them are quite slow, say you've got a source that's giving you one bit of entropy per second. You don't want to pull it more than once per second because that's a waste of resources. But the other thing that you might not think about is that you don't want to push it to your entropy pool more than once per second either. Because if your entropy pool has been compromised and it's relying on this source, and you give it one bit of entropy, your attacker's got 1 second to try two different values, or arguably one, before he knows that he breaks it again. Whereas if you put it into an accumulation buffer and collect it for 60 seconds, say, then he's got 60 seconds to try 2 to the power of 60 combinations, which is much harder. So collect it into an accumulation buffer, tune it, decide when you're going to add to the final application's pool, and at that point, you can condition it if you like. OpenSSL will do that for you. But it's depending on what your uses are. If you want to make it a very general piece of software, you might not want to do that in some cases. So overall, what I'm saying is if you're using OpenSSL, it's a good idea to make sure that you're giving it some good quality entropy. And I should say at this point, any toolkit I've worked with, that's a good idea, sometimes for different reasons. I worked with a toolkit as well that the performance of it was such that it was sitting in tight loops gathering entropy, and on some systems that wasn't working, and we needed a different mechanism. Anyway, it's a good idea to bring your own entropy. It's a good idea to reseed. When you find your various sources, or when you're looking for your various sources, make sure you test them and make sure that you trust them. So if you have any questions, feel free to contact me at this address. And I also want to just run this for you for fun. Oops. This is the Dice-O-Matic it should be. It starts going. It's a lot of fun to watch. Okay. If you have any questions while that's running, then feel free to ask.
But it's top-secret.
Are you getting all those values, Valerie? They have a camera at the back that at the bottom that takes pictures. And anyway. Yeah. Yes.
So we did a fair bit of research on where random numbers go to and come from on Intel platforms, since I work for Intel.
Yeah.
And one of the observations was if you just take a standard Linux kernel distribution and run it, you might find you're getting a few bits per second of entropy on a system that's got 2 gigabytes per second of entropy available. Various things were done, and we talked to various library vendors, and we had somebody write some code in itself to do the right thing with regard to gathering entropy from read-RAM. But the thing that fixed the problem in most of the distributions was not in gathering in kernels or in crypto libraries, but in fixing RNGD, which is able to look at, hey, what platform am I on, get the entropy from that, and then feed it to the kernel and appetize the correct entropy. And that would fix the boot time entropy problem. It would fix the availability problem. On the other side, where is it going? And the answer is nowhere fast on almost all systems. There's a periodic demand for a few bytes here and a few bytes there of random numbers. The exception is SSL network concentrators, which need full rate per packet IVs. And the speed of your random number availability represents the bottom line performance impact on your system. So we didn't know this going into it, right, doing this work. It was a case of, well, where's it coming from? Where's it going through the kernel? What are the applications doing with it on the other side? And we found these quite distinct endpoints of failure to collect it and high demand in some places and low demand in others. But if you're doing your own system, be cognizant of how it's getting to the kernel, how it's coming out of the kernel, because it matters.
Right. Well, that's a fair comment. I agree with what you're saying. Did anyone else have a question or comment? I think we're pretty much out of time.
Thank you, Denis. Let's give him a big hand. Thank you. All right.